Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out if you like. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of Nature Man. That would be Joe Knowles, a kind of Bear Grylls of the early 1900s, who went on a quest to prove to everybody that he actually wasn't a fraud. It didn't quite work out, not because of any problem on his part, but because of World War I. I'll tell you that whole story here. It was first published on September 12th, 2010, under the headline, Guns of August Blasted Nature Man's Quest to Prove He Was Not a Fraud. And here it is. In July of 1914, when World War I's Guns of August started to speak, one of their first casualties happened half a world away in a forest in southern Oregon. It wasn't a physical casualty. No, the outbreak of the war destroyed the last real opportunity for a man named Joe Knowles to prove he wasn't a fraud. As a result, most people have never heard of Joe, and those who have think of him as just another in a long line of armchair woodsmen and backwoods charlatans. And maybe they're right, but thanks to those crazy European warlords, we'll never really know if that's the case, or if Joe was the real thing, a genuine marvel whose reputation was ruined by a vicious proxy fight between a pair of rival rag sheet newspapers. The reason Joe needed to prove himself in Oregon was he'd made a national name for himself several years before when he plunged naked, or nearly so, into the wilderness of northern Maine. 3 months later, a scruffy and bearded Knowles emerged from the woods clad in a bearskin taken from a beast that he had reportedly trapped in a pit and clubbed to death, wearing other garments made from the hide of a deer caught and killed with his bare hands. He had prepared regular messages written on birch bark with charcoal, and these had been used to faithfully document his adventures in the Boston Post. It helped that he was a skilled artist and used charcoal to sketch scenes to go with all his messages. The whole thing had captured the imagination of an America that still hadn't quite gotten used to not being a frontier country anymore. Mountain men were already a distant memory, cowboys were a dying breed, and Indians were a tiny and demoralized remnant of a once proud and powerful presence in the land. But here now was Joe Knowles, the American Adam, to prove that a naked American could still take on a howling wilderness and thrive. But the Post's rival newspaper, the Boston American, was skeptical and envious. It published an article presenting a strong argument, backed with some circumstantial evidence, but still relatively strong as for circumstantial evidence. Wouldn't have held up in court, but it was enough to create doubt that Joe hadn't spent the entire 3 months in the wilderness. For one thing, his good friend, who was receiving and transmitting his birch bark messages, had a cozy little cabin in the area, reportedly well stocked with Joe's favorite brand of beer. And there were rumors that his animal skins had been tanned by a commercial process and sported bullet holes. Now as then, it seems pretty likely that Joe cheated, at least a little, on his wilderness regimen. It also seems the allegations could have easily been tested by a careful examination of the animal pelts, and the fact that this was not done, so far as I've been able to learn, is particularly damning. So the question remains, did he really do it? And if not, well, was it because he actually couldn't? Luckily for Joe, William Randolph Hearst, owner of his erstwhile nemesis, the Boston American, was willing to finance a second demonstration. This time there would be third-party observers in the form of well-known university professors in the woods with him, making sure everything he said was true. And it would take place in the Siskiyou Wilderness near Ashland, a continent away from Joe's friend and their suspicious stocks of beer. Hearst's entire edgy newspaper empire was at the ready. Wild beasts roar invitation to Joe Knowles, one banner headline in the San Francisco Examiner screeched. Others, while perhaps a bit less poetic, were similar. Joe once again stripped off his clothes and dove into the woods. And by all accounts, he was doing pretty well there when a week later, his story was suddenly shoved off the front pages and the entire nation lost interest all at once. Blood. Kill a liters of blood. tons of it, was pouring every day into the soils of Belgium and northern France. Americans who'd recently immigrated from Germany, Austria, Russia, Britain, France, wondered if some of it was spilled from their own relatives or loved ones from the old country. The triumphant flower of civilization, held up for a century as a shining example for the developing world, was busy committing suicide. Who cared now about some naked guy beating through the bushes in southern Oregon? Joe's exercise was called off. He had another chance in 1916 after the Americans had tired of war news, but by this time Hearst sent a mostly naked Dawn girl into the woods with him at the same time. A different part of the woods. They were never together. That would have been too scandalous. When a week later she gave up, so did most of the media coverage. Joe ended up living on the coast of Washington in a funny little cabin built with driftwood and bits of wrecked ships. To the end of his days, he maintained that his demonstration of woodsmanship was the real thing. He told writer Stuart Holbrook that he had just two regrets. First, that he didn't manage to befriend a bear cub to lead out of the Maine woods. And second, that stupid war. That's it for today's Offbeat Oregon History Podcast episode. What you've been listening to is an archive column from the newspaper service. If you'd like more, there's a couple dozen more of these podcasts on iTunes. Just search the iTunes store for Oregon History, or go to offbeatoregon.com/iTunes and we'll redirect you right to it. There are also hundreds of columns on the website going back to 2008, most of them with pictures. On the website, you can also subscribe to this podcast. It's free, of course, to get it delivered straight to your smartphone every day via RSS or iTunes. You'll also find links to the Offbeat Oregon Facebook page and Twitter feed so you can join the conversation online. Our theme music is a track called The Old Man's Waltz, performed by the Atlas String Band and written by Carmen Ficarra. All these columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Are you coming to Corvallis anytime soon? Drop me a line if you are, and let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. Finally, my book about the naughty bits of 1890s Portland just came out, and if you like these podcasts, chances are pretty good you'll like it. It's titled Wicked Portland. It's from the History Press, and check it out. You can read the lost chapter, which is the chapter I had to cut out of the book for space reasons, at wickedportland.com/lost. And if you like what you see, a search for Wicked Portland brings it right up on Amazon. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.